Lots to get through on the show this evening. If you'd like to get in touch with us, 086-8104-106 is the number to send a text or a WhatsApp. Clare will play Tipperary in the Munster Senior Hurling Championship semi-finals. It's up to Tony Kelly. Scored the only goal of the game, the banner beating Waterford 122 to 21 points today in Thurles. We can get a full-time report on that game from Dahi Boland.
Full-time here, and it's Clare who advanced to a Munster semi-final against Tipperary. The game ending 122 to 21 points in Clare's favour, a very much deserving the win. 112 from Tony Kelly and an impressive performance from Aidan McCarthy at corner forward with 3 from play, but it was John Conlon at centre half back that was the star man for Brian Lohan today. Liam Cahill will be disappointed with his team's performance today. Stephen Bennett, the only starting forward to score from play. Full time here at Semple Stadium, it's Clare who advance winning 122 to 21 points.
That's Dahi Boland there at Semple Stadium. We're going to hear from Brian Lohan and from Liam Cahill in just a little bit on the show. Elsewhere, Wexford will meet the All-Ireland Senior Football Champions Dublin next weekend after the Model County overcame Wicklow today by 2-11 to 14 points in the first round of the Leinster Championship in Aughrim. Mark Rossiter and Martin O'Connor scoring the goals for Wexford. Offaly have beaten Louth after extra time in Navan. Bernard Allen, Niall McNamee, Peter Cunningham with the goals as they beat Louth 3-19 to 19 points. They'll now face Kildare. Elsewhere, Longford and Carlow are currently going head to head. That game underway earlier on this evening, and the latest score from there with time nearly up, it's Longford lead by 24 points to 213. Donegal beat down today 225 to 112. Newry to go through to the Ulster quarter finals. Jimmy Brennan and Paddy McBrearty with the goals. Donegal will face Derry in the next round. Keane O'Sullivan, meanwhile, has retired from intercounty football. The Kilmacud Crokes defender was a key part of Dublin's success over the last decade, being a part of 8 All-Ireland senior winning panels. He says that injuries have made the decision for him to call it a day. In ladies football, Laois have won the Division 3 league title after beating Kildare today 2-10 to 3-6. At the European Championship, second half just about to kick off in Budapest. Netherlands and Czech Republic going head-to-head in the last 16, remains scoreless there. And then tonight is the defending champions Portugal against Belgium in Seville. That is an 8 p.m. kickoff. In rugby, some concerning news, and potentially is a big impact on the Lions tours, that 3 South African players have tested positive for COVID-19. That was emerged today. The Springboks have suspended training and they've all been placed in isolation. So a lot of discussions about contingency plans. The Lions themselves should fly out to Johannesburg later on this evening. And there could be doubts about the 8-match series taking place as scheduled. So that's going to be very interesting to see what happens there. Of course, the Lions had a comfortable win yesterday in their warm-up match over Japan, losing captain Alan Wynne-Jones to injury. But Conor Murray, the Munster man, a bit of a surprise replacement, but we're happy out as Munster people, I guess, to see Conor Murray named Munster captain. So it remains to be seen what happens there with the Springboks ahead of the Lions tour. Golf, Norway's Victor Hovland has won the BMW International Open in Munich. He shot a final round of 70 for a 19 under par total, 2 shots clear of Martin Kaymer. Niall Kearney ended in a tie for 12th on 12 under par. In motorsport, Red Bull driver Max Verstappen held off the challenge of Lewis Hamilton to win the Styrian Grand Prix today in Austria. He's now 18 points clear at the top of the Drivers' Championship. And in racing, the Group 1 Pretty Polly Stakes at the Curragh was won by the 16-5 chance at Thundering Knights. Second half's just kicked off in Budapest, Netherlands nil. Netherlands nil, excuse me. It's like Czech Republic, excuse me. Couldn't get the words out there. Netherlands and Czech Republic scoreless. The second half has just kicked off. We are going to get reaction though from Semple Stadium and that win for Clare over Waterford today. Going to hear from Waterford boss Liam Cahill shortly. First though, the reaction of Clare manager Brian Lund.
Yeah, I suppose it was a bit frantic towards the end. You know, I suppose that's what happens when you start missing shots that you'd normally put over, and then, you know, there's a little bit of panic sets in, and you know, I don't know what our wide count was, but our wide count and our decision making probably needs to be improved on, and probably needs to be improved on fairly drastically.
You want to have one play, but it's a mixed blessing. You're over again in 8 days, so you're pretty well rested, obviously, well prepared.
Yeah, I suppose you can look at it both ways. Like, the, you know, we've got a match under our belts, a good game out in Turles, against good opposition. So we're learning a bit more about our team. And then I suppose against that, you know the Tip lads are sitting at home watching that, are able to do their analysis, able to pick us apart, or pick whoever won the game apart. So you can look at it in two different ways.
Your own game plan seemed to work fairly well today. You had the measure of water really packed for most of the match.
Yeah, look, we're happy enough with how our lads played. Like, and you know, everyone has a job to do when you come down to Turles, and if one person doesn't do the job, you're going to be in trouble. So all our lads did the job pretty well today.
Brian, did you feel a starting Tony Kelly at full forward kind of unsettled a Waterford defence that were missing out of key figures today?
Yeah, I suppose. Look, Fronty being injured was a big one for Waterford, and also Jamie Barron being out as well, obviously, was a massive loss for them. We had one or two lads, that's, you know, with the attritional nature of the league, that's what you're going to have. But certainly Waterford did miss those two guys.
What did you learn from the Páirc Uí Chaoimh game before Christmas, Brian, heading into today's game?
Well, I suppose the big thing from last year was our fitness. Like, we were blown out of it in the last 10 minutes last year. So we had a huge amount of work to do over the summer. But, you know, we've good faith in our lads, good, you know, good spirit in the group, and good bunch of guys there. So we've got good quality to work with.
Did that sort of a defeat act as motivation for today, Brian?
It wasn't extra special motivation, but you know, obviously when you're beaten by a team, you do want to rally against them, and you do want to respond. Big challenge obviously for us to respond, but I think we did it pretty okay. Maybe they were a little bit off, probably weren't as good as what Waterford can be, so they probably have scope for improvement.
Brian, just that second water break there in the second half, we saw you fairly animated, a few choice words said. What did you say to the players exactly?
I suppose really does kind of conversations should be inside in the dressing room rather than being outside. We thought we'd made a couple of mistakes around that time, so we were just trying to, sometimes it's hard to get what you're thinking out onto the field.
Would you like to see more fans at the game next week, Brian? It's going to be 2,500 at Limerick and Cork, also a Munster semi-final. Only 200 at Clare versus Tipperary. What are your thoughts on that?
Jeez, I'd love to see more fans at the game. You know, it'll be an awful lot less hassle for us from a ticketing perspective. Like, we got 80 tickets, and you know, we tried to give two tickets to each one of the players, so that was 74 tickets, so we'd six for our backroom team. Like, so it meant that some of our backroom had to stay at home again. So, you know, that's we could do with a couple more, you know. That decision is out of my hands. Thanks, Brian.
That's Clare manager Brian Lawn there speaking to the media after their win over Waterford today in the Munster Senior Hurling Championship. Looked very, very good today, the Clare in patches. Let Waterford back into the game, I suppose, late on, but getting the victory in Tony Kelly with the only goal of the game. Going to get the reaction from the Waterford camp now. This is manager Liam Cahill speaking to the Assembly Media up in Semple Stadium.
I wouldn't think so. I thought we could have been beaten a lot more, to be honest. We arrived as flattest, one of the most flattest performances on my reign here. I was just bitterly disappointed. Can't really put my finger on it, to be honest. But then again, I suppose, to be fair to Clare, I'm not taking away from their performance. They brought what they had to win Munster Championship Hurling, and all credit to them in fairness. But we definitely didn't bring the energy that we're accustomed to be honest.
Where did you feel you came up short today, Liam?
So we came up short in a lot of areas. We found it very hard to win breaking ball in the middle of the field. But, you know, when we went to try and take it on and break the lines a little, we failed. And you know, passes to the man's hand didn't go to hand. And you know, there was our movement and our puck outs. But when you're looking in at a flat team, it's very, very hard to try and make the positional changes to correct these things, because we try desperately to get energy on the field. We probably did finish it up there near the end, get good energy in, and credit to the subs that came on. But bitterly disappointing day for me and the players.
Is that the most disappointing aspect, Liam, that the energy levels, the intensity levels, the work rate that are accustomed with this Waterford team are so low today?
Yeah, but that'd be one, but I will give the lads credit, like they stuck right in near the end, you know, they kept hurling away and, you know, maybe one or two little chances there near the end, you would have brought back to 3 points and going down the home straight, you wouldn't know what might happen. But when you're clinging to them kind of things, like, again, a team like the quality of Clare and their backs up, like, you're not going to, you don't usually come out the right side of it. But yeah, that'd be the most disappointing part of it, that for a young, energetic team, you know, when I say young, with the exception of one or two players, the rest of our team are early 20s, like, and they just, we were just flat. And again, it's, we'll all have to look at it again, look at it from a management perspective, get the S&C people in around it and see, can we see what caused that today? But definitely it's a concern.
It started out the spine of the team that lined out in the All-Ireland final, Liam. Stephen O'Keefe, Conor Prunty, Ty De Bourcq, Jamie Byrne. How much did you miss those players, do you feel?
Yeah, they're all massive players. You know, that's what I would say, and they're big damn players, and you know, it's hard to replace them. But you know, we've trolled hard now around the scene in Waterford, the club scene in Waterford, and I really felt we had a good strong panel, and we still have a good strong panel assembled. And I know we were without them guys, as you mentioned, through injuries and what have you, but I felt that the guys stepping in to take on the mantle today were well equipped to do it. But yeah, look, the long and short of it is, experienced players like that, they are hard to replace. But good learnings again today for them younger fellas, because it was a tough place there for the majority of that game.
Are jerseys back up for grabs for qualifiers, Liam?
I'm sure they have to be. I have to throw everything at this now. You know, I'm going to look at it really stringently and rigorously there, because ultimately, you know, we had too many lads fail today. You know, we had too many players fail today for my liking. And I have 37 on a squad and they're all putting in great work, and it's very hard. I had 11 guys training earlier this morning that trained really, really hard, and they must be looking in at that to say, what have I to do to get into this squad? So I'd be rewarding any player that can put their hand up over the next fortnight or 3 weeks to a qualifier, because at this stage I have nothing to lose. I'm going to throw everything at it between now and then.
I suppose he conceded a lot of goals in the league campaign and all in 21 weeks. He had a huge amount of scoring chances. You're conceding, that must be a concern.
Yeah, it is a concern. Like, you know, we didn't give away, with the exception of the penalty today, we didn't give away, you know, maybe as many goal chances. But yeah, look, it's a concern. It's there. It's obvious. It's a stat that jumps out of us. We're well aware of it. I didn't realise that it was 23. Many wides, 23
wides. 21 wides.
21 wides. Like, that, you know, that tells the story itself. Like, you're looking in at it and you're wondering why these Clare jerseys are getting pot shots at the goal, and fellas 5 and 10 and 15 yards away from getting a hook or a block, and it's just something, you know, that I'm not accustomed to with this group of players, to be fair to them.
I suppose particularly in the opening stages there's a huge amount of swarming defence on your attack. Were you kind of surprised by the tactics that they employed, particularly playing Tony Kelly in the full forward lines though?
Yeah, like, that was, you know, we had planned for that as well. Because, you know, let's be fair, we expected that Tony Kelly would appear on an inside forward line at some stage, and I'm sure Clare were going to monitor that as to see how the supply of the ball was going to be like. And as it turned out, the supply of the ball was quite good, so they had no real need to move him from there. But they definitely pull him back an extra man across their half back line on you know, all occasions when we turned him over in the middle of the field, that left our guys with a lot of headaches to try and sort out, and we just hadn't that energy to run the ball to try and get past that extra defender and create, you know, what we're about, and that's you know, movement and creating overlaps. And you know, fair play to Brian Lawrence, you know, today they came well equipped, they came ready to battle, and we didn't, and that's the bottom line.
Any issues with penalty?
Not really. It was, from what I could see, again, I look at it tonight, but from what I could see, it was inside the 21-yard line, and the foul was there. Probably was a goal chance had Shane, this is just my initial reaction, just looking at it, had Shane Fives not dragged out of the forward. So yeah, I know, I have no problems with that. Look, you know, that's the rules, and I think Colm Lyons applied the rule correctly.
Yeah, it's a very honest assessment by Waterford manager Liam Cahill of his team's performance today, and you heard him there saying jerseys have to be up for grabs now after that performance, the flattest performance of his tenure, he said. So very disappointed, Liam Cahill there speaking after today's defeat to Clare. But it's great to have the Munster Hurling Championship back, great to have Championship Sunday back. Weird seeing Semple Stadium empty, it still doesn't, I know there was 200 fans in there, but it's the Munster Hurling Championship with the fans is it's greatly lessened, so hopefully we can get fans back into the grounds over the course of the summer. because it's not the Munster Championship, but the Munster Championship Roar. Netherlands have lost a player. They're taking on Czech Republic. 57 minutes gone in Budapest. Matthijs de Ligt showing a straight red card for the Netherlands. So they are down to 10 for the last half hour of that game in the European Championship last 16. And tonight it is, on paper, should be a cracker, Belgium and Portugal. That is an 8 o'clock start. Going to continue going around the grounds. Going to hear from Donegal boss Declan Bonner. He spoke to Aisling O'Reilly after their win over Down today.
The time I spoke to you was after the Cavan game last year. You're a little bit happier here today in this championship.
Yeah, listen, Aisling, anytime you get a victory in Ulster, it's great. So, yeah, we just come up the road today. You know, we worked hard over the last 3 to 4 weeks to get ready for this match. And, you know, we just, as long as we come out of here with a victory, that's all we're looking for. But I thought the lads put in a really good performance. And as I say, it's all systems going now for Derry in 2 weeks.
It was seriously high scoring. Did you expect it to be that high scoring? Did you think Down were going to put up a bit more of a fight than that?
Yeah, I thought we attacked very well, you know, and we got some really, really good scores on the board. And but listen, as I say, the game's just over. All our focus now is really on Derry, and we look back on that game and we take whatever we can out of it, and we look at areas where we need to improve. But we will need to improve it, because Derry's going to pose a real challenge for us.
Absolutely, and I spoke to Michael Murphy there. He said that his hamstring's just a little bit tight, that he should be okay.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So listen, we took him out. He'd been going well in training over the last week, 10 days, and you know, he started the game extremely well, but he just tightened up after about 30 minutes, so we just took him out. And yeah, we're hopeful that he'll be okay for 2 weeks' time.
And overall, what impressed you the most? Patrick McBrearty was something else up there in the forward line today.
Yeah, listen, yeah, Patrick has been playing well for us, and he had a very good league campaign. And, you know, he's based back in Donegal now, which is a huge help to us. And he's been training extremely well. So, yeah, Patrick, as well as, I mean, I think the whole team put on a really good performance. I thought it was a really professional performance today. And, you know, as I say, we get ready now. We go back to train Tuesday night and get ready for the next challenge.
And you're against Derry next, and it's going to be home advantage. It might be nice to have the fans back there as well.
Yeah, it'd be great to have a full house in McCool Park. I don't think we're going to get that, I think, but listen here, there will be probably 500 people at it. So, yeah, looking forward to it now, and I say that preparation for us starts immediately.
That's Declan Bonner there speaking to Aisling O'Reilly after their win today over Down. As you mentioned, sets up a meeting with Derry. 225 to 112 is how it finished today. Jamie Brennan and Paddy McBrearty with the goals. Now, yesterday, the Limerick footballers defeated Waterford. A big result for them, 418 to 12 points. They set up a meeting with Cork on Saturday week. Valerie Wheeler, our very own, was there for us, and I got a chance to speak to Limerick manager Billy Lee about that win and the prospect of facing Cork.
Start of the championship.
Yeah, it is. Look, it's great. We put up a big score, a lot of scorers, and mostly from play, so we're happy with that. I just probably felt that the scoreline was a bit harsh on Waterford. You know, we were up, I think, 7 points at half time, but in my head it was 11 scores to 7 scores at half time, and they caused us trouble in the first half. So, you know, it wasn't the scoreline might reflect an easy win, but far from it. In what we're trying to do, we're trying to hold our own standard, whatever standard that is at, and ensure we get to that standard. And I suppose today was a new juncture for us with a high level of expectation, so we had to just be very careful, and we certainly didn't underestimate them. I think the scoreline will tell you that. You have to give teams the due respect they deserve, and thankfully we did that, and thankfully we got through the game.
A lot of period of dominance, which you must be impressed with.
Yeah, I suppose, but a lot of that, I suppose, came in the last 20 minutes maybe, you know. Maybe the fizz might have been gone out of Waterford at that stage. We played some great attacking football in the first half, but you know, they were causing us trouble too when they ran at us. So yeah, we dominated, and then we made some errors, and you know, silly errors, I suppose, at times. And it's to avoid all that complacency when you're on top. That's the challenge for teams like us. When you're not used to being favourites, you have to try and work hard and prepare properly and be ready for the challenges. But look, I'm delighted for the lads. You know, we look forward to the Cork game and see where it takes us.
I think it was 2-11 to 5 points, as in he scored 2-11 to their 5 points in the second half, which is great.
Yeah, look, I suppose I didn't realise it was that much, but happy with that. Look, it's you wouldn't have thought that at half time the way the game was, and Waterford played with the elements in the second half, you know. But happy overall, Valerie. Yeah.
Danny Neville came off. Is it a hand injury or finger? Yeah. It looks like he was a bit of trouble.
Yeah, he's just got gone up about whatever happens, just got a bruise or a bang on it, like, so don't think it's anything too serious. He'll probably avoid a training session, one session, but
he's,
I don't think it's much.
He's dangerous in there.
Yeah, Danny's good looking. It's great to see Danny getting. He's a long time with the county, and he'll depart the shores this year. And we wish him well, and hopefully he'll where he heads to, he'll settle in and have a good life there for as long as he's out there. And hopefully we won't see the end of him when we're finished, and he'll get back to Limerick at some point and start kicking ball for us again.
It's a great full forward line. I mean, the two Burks as well in there. I think was the first start for.
Might have been. Yeah. I'll let you figure out the statistics on that side of it. Robbie started really well. I think had a goal and 2 points very early in the game and was a threat inside there. And Robbie is just class player, you know. When you think he might be quiet, next thing he's bang bang bang, and you know he's a class. They're class players, and look, we're delighted to have these guys on board and representing us well. And we're happy with that.
The Rebels next. You look forward to that.
Oh God, I don't know about looking forward to it now, but 2 years ago we got our rear end back to us in the plate, so we've got to see how much of a gap we've closed, and that'll be the objective for us, and I suppose play to the standard we want to play to, and if that's better than Cork, great. If that's behind Cork, then we've got to work a bit harder to get up to Cork on the day and see where it goes, and that's the way we'll approach it, and we'll see from there.
That's Limerick boss Billy Lee there speaking after their win over Waterford, set up a meeting with the footballers of Cork on Saturday week, that game in the Gaelic grounds at 3 p.m. start on the 10th of July, so it should be an interesting clash, and we'll be previewing that game on the Big Red Bench next weekend. Alright, last night, disappointment for the Cork ladies footballers. They were beaten by Dublin in the Lidl Ladies National Football League final. Dublin 215, Cork 113 was how it finished up in Croke Park. Ger McCarthy, the host of the Women in Sport podcast every Thursday on Cork Red FM, you'll get that on the Big Red Bench podcast feed, has been in conversation with our Cork coach Paddy O'Shea.
Okay, Paddy O'Shea, disappointment in Croke Park on Saturday night, obviously losing a league final to Dublin, but considering how close the previous two games were, and overall, what's your assessment of Cork at the end of that league campaign?
Yeah, we're happy about our campaign went in all, I suppose. We've gotten some very good things out of it, and we slagged a few other things out of the league campaign too. Certainly we have some stuff we need to work on. You're kind of judging yourself really in two different categories. You're judging yourself against Dublin, and you're judging yourself against the rest of the teams in the competition, because Dublin are at step above everybody else. So kind of have to tweak your preparation and tweak the way you set yourself up when it comes to Dublin. So again, the league just really proved that again to us, and it's flagged a few things for us. But again, we've learned a lot about ourselves and about our panel throughout the league. So yeah, all in all, we're very happy.
Yeah, I don't want to dwell on it too much now, but I mean, I have to pick out Hannah Tyrrell. She has been pretty much a thorn in your side over the last couple of games. She's an exceptionally talented player, and like, it's just an example of how one player can make it. No, she's not the only player in that Dublin team, but how one player on form and the way she's been over the last number of weeks and months can make a huge difference to an already talented side.
Yeah, and you're right, and the worrying thing about that is she seems to be getting better and better the longer she's back. Obviously, the more she's improving, she's getting the turns of the game again. She's a powerful player, big leader for them, big character in their dressing room, I'd imagine. But again, like so many of their other players, we just have to find a way to counteract that and to try and nullify them as best we can. But you know, you have to be realistic about things too, and you know, you're coming up against a very, very good side, very experienced side, and you know, you can't set your expectations too high in terms of stopping them all up. It's going to damage control a lot of the time, and hoping that you do enough throughout their whole team and throughout the whole field where you can make up the numbers afterwards to push on and get a win against them. But again, you know, a lot of teams have tried in the last couple of years, a lot of teams have failed, but we'll keep on trying, I suppose, with the message to the girls.
You mentioned all the positives coming out of this league campaign. One of the big things, and I mentioned it to Martine O'Brien earlier, is the number of players who got game time and who got useful game time to give you, the management team and Efi, an opportunity to show what they could do. I would imagine you'd be most pleased with that coming out of the league.
Yeah, we do. Again, the league has proved to us that we have a very strong panel. We have used a lot of girls in the league. In the five league games that we've played, anytime we've made changes with girls from off the bench, they've all made a difference. The majority of the time anyway, they've made a difference to the game that we've played. So that's very promising. And again, it just solidifies the point that our panel is very strong. There's still another few to come back into the panel from injury or whatever else. So when that happens, you know, normally after the league, you have a bit of a break to the first championship game. We don't. We have a quick turnaround, but over the last 2 weeks, we've had a lot of injuries clear up, a few of them long-term. I'm waiting on another couple now as well, so the panel is strong, definitely coming over the back of the league, and it's going to get stronger again in the next couple of weeks.
Does that help, Paddy, though, the fact that that first championship game is coming up so fast? I mean, you're back in the pitch next Wednesday night, and from there, like, it's all guns blazing, yeah?
It does, to be honest with you. It's kind of what you make of it, really. You could put a positive spin on it or a negative spin, whichever way you approach it, but obviously we're going to try and put as much of a positive spin on it as we can. Preparation has been going very well the last couple of weeks, preparing for these league games. But it's time to knuckle down and take it up a notch, I think, in the next 2 weeks before the meet again.
You probably didn't get a chance to see Meath in action last night before your own game because you were preparing for that Dublin showdown, but they are a very, very impressive unit and they're going to test you.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's a serious game for us, in fairness. The first game out, again, 2 weeks after a long league campaign where the girls have worked very hard for very long. Some of the lads have been watching that game already since yesterday, and we've had a few conversations already since this morning getting on the bed about me. And it is going to be a formidable challenge for us. But, you know, we kind of have to, we'll focus on me for what we can do. But after that, we'll be focusing on ourselves again, like we try to do all the time. And once we get ourselves right and hopefully tick all our own boxes, we should be okay.
Yeah, that's Cork coach Paddy O'Shea speaking to the Big Red Bench Women in Sport podcast presenter John McCarthy about last night's defeat to Dublin and, of course, their championship game upcoming very, very soon against Meath as well. So disappointment for the Rebels last night, but we heard from Aoife Fitzgerald on yesterday's show and he was kind of more looking ahead to the championship than last night's game. But still, you'd like to beat Dublin. You always like beating Dublin, but as Paddy mentioned there, Dublin looked very, very good indeed last night, and they will certainly take some stopping in the championship. At the European Championships and the game happening this evening, Czech Republic have gone a goal up. They are leading Netherlands by a goal to the Netherlands, of course, down to 10. They've just gotten a goal to go a goal up. And there is 20 minutes left to go in that game. So Netherlands 0, Czech Republic 1 is how things stand in Budapest at the moment. And one game this evening in Division 1B of the Red FM Hurling League. It is the Bishops and the Bears going head to head. It's Bishopstown 11 points. The Bears 11 points. 9 minutes gone there in the second half. Still to come on the show, we're going to talk about Co-Ramblers' win last night. And we're talking tennis as well.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
We're here with you on the bench until 7 p.m. going to talk tennis now. And last week was an incredible week for Irish tennis as they secured promotion to Group 2 of the Davis Cup. Cork's Cian Blake was co-captain in the absence of Conor Ireland. I spoke to him about an incredible week in Cyprus. Congratulations, buddy. That's like an incredible achievement, what you've achieved over in Cyprus last week. Has it sunk in yet, the magnitude of what you've achieved?
I suppose since I've been locked up in hotel quarantine since I got back, maybe it hasn't sunk in yet because I'm not in normal normal life yet. But yeah, look, it was a fantastic week. We the lads were absolutely brilliant from the first ball, from the first day. So it really was more than we ever expected, and we're just delighted to be delighted to get promoted and looking forward to what next year brings. You know,
as you say, you are quarantined since you've come back from Cyprus. But what's the reaction like been to the week you've had?
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I mean, I think like the amount of messages and amount of good wishes we got when we were over there. I think after the Luxembourg tie the first day, we just realized the enormity of what Davis Cup is. Like, I mean, my phone was going for maybe 2 or 3 hours nonstop. All the lads were the same. So it's been fantastic. I think it's really been a good thing for tennis in this country, and we hope that there's better things to come next year as well.
You said to me before you left in our pre-interview, you were quietly confident, and that's obviously borne out, like, you know, with the promotion. It's an incredible achievement, but you were always confident in the lads and their ability.
Yeah, I was. I thought we had a good team. I knew that a couple of nations on paper were stronger than us, but actually going into the event, we were the fifth highest ranked out of the seven, so we knew we were going to have to beat nations that were ranked ahead of us, and we did that. But I thought I thought that the players were all in good form, pretty good form going into it, and I felt that if we could build a kind of team environment and get a good team spirit going, I felt that we could do well, and just lucky that it happened that way. You know, I think the lads bought into everything we were trying to do from the first day, and yeah, it just all turned out great, so delighted.
Yeah, that was something we talked about as well, was that team spirit and how important it is, and obviously that's something you fostered, and from everyone in the team, as mentioned, took it on board, and that's probably what helped you to victory, I suppose.
Yeah, we feel that made a huge difference. I mean, that really started not when we got there, that started on the plane. I mean, I was in the lads' ears, and so was Carlos, about how important it is being a good teammate and creating that team environment. And as I said before, I think as Irish people, we are good teammates, you know, so we really wanted to make sure that everyone pulled together, and if we were lacking in any area, that the team spirit would make up for that. So I think it did, and the lads were fantastic when they were off court. We were the loudest team there, and it really helped the people on court, you know. So it huge part of it, and like it is with any team really, Rory, and I suppose in tennis it's a bit different because the lads are travelling on their own all the time, so they love that week and they love getting and supporting their teammates. So yeah, no, it was fantastic.
And getting off to a winning start as well against Luxembourg in the first match was obviously vital, and that's what you did, and some fantastic performances on the day as well.
Yeah, I suppose after we had the draw on the Tuesday, and we were in the bottom pot of teams, so we knew that we'd have to beat two teams that are stronger than us on paper. So the Luxembourg match was the match that we had kind of earmarked as a match we could win. Started tough. Oscar went out and played a guy called Chris Roddish, a young guy that is actually based in the States now. He was top 50 in the world junior, and he lost a tight three-set match, so it put a lot of pressure on Simon Carr. But Simon answered the call brilliantly, and he won in two sets, and we went out and won the doubles fairly convincingly. When I look back at it now, obviously at the time when I was at the side of the court, I didn't think anything was clear cut or anything was convincing, but looking back at it now, it was a really good performance from the lads, you know. So that kind of set us up for the week then. We knew that we'd have a tough task against Monaco, and then we did fancy ourselves against Malta. So that first match really, and the momentum we got from the first match, and that's something that we had said to the lads too, that we needed to start right and start well, and that definitely helped us throughout the week.
As you mentioned, Monaco obviously strong, and the defeat to them was important for the lads not to let the heads drop, I suppose, after that defeat.
Yeah, Monaco were very strong. Look, they won the event. They were the strongest team there. They had number one Luca Caterina, who actually Simon beat actually, but he was actually involved in the Monte Carlo Master Series this year, and he pushed one of the top Italian guys, Salvatore Caruso, to three sets. So like, he top level player, and their doubles team, Hugo Nice, was actually in the quarterfinals of the French Open, and Arniedo, the guy with him, is top 100 in the world as well. So we knew that they were going to be the strongest team, but we fought really well. It went down to the doubles and we lost in two sets, even though we had chances to break at the start of the first set, and I would have liked if we had got ahead to put a bit of bit more pressure on them and see how they reacted. But we played really well. The lads played really well that day in really tough conditions. I mean, that's probably worth noting, that the conditions over there were so warm over there, 35, 36 degrees that day. And our guys actually held up fairly well. The Monaco guys, Caterina, when he played Simon, was struggling. He had the doctor on once or twice. So he struggled, but Simon stayed strong and actually went out and played doubles then after as well. So it was a great effort by him and by the whole team.
Yeah, exactly. Did you have to pick the lads up after that Monaco defeat, or were they okay afterwards, or what was it like?
They're very upbeat throughout the whole week, really, as such. Like, we had a goal, and it was to get promoted. It wasn't to win every match. It was, we were trying to win every match, absolutely, but our goal was for promotion. And even after losing to Monaco, we knew it was still in our own hands. After the Monaco match, ideally going into it, we always wanted to rest Simon, because he was our number one player. He had played singles and doubles against Luxembourg on the Wednesday and played singles and doubles against Monaco on the Thursday. So we took that, I suppose, chance on the Friday against Malta, and we brought Amar in who made his debut at Davis Cup level, and Oscar played at one single. So we'd full belief in the whole team, and I think that again that we kind of helped with the team spirit, that everyone was playing, everyone was part of it. So great performance on the Friday against Malta to beat them 3-0, and then obviously Simon came back on the Saturday against Georgia for the promotion playoff and played very well again, played singles and doubles again with Dave O'Hare. So yeah, everything worked out well. You know what these things were, you take a chance on the Friday, and it could have went the other way and probably wouldn't be talking, you know, if it had, like, but it worked out and we were lucky, but we're just glad that it did work out, you know.
Yeah, for you as co-captain, we're making these decisions, it must be kind of a heart and mouth kind of thing. It's like, am I making the right decision here kind of thing?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, like, obviously spoke to Carlos a lot about it, linked him with Conor Nyland, and yeah, it took a while to make that decision. We spoke with Simon as well. Simon's foot, actually, he was in a bad way with blisters after that. So he was probably playing over the 2 days. He was probably on court probably six, seven hours in 35, 36 degree heat. So it was tough for him. So we kind of made a joint decision. We involved Simon in the decision as well. We felt that was important, that he had his say. So it was a tough decision, and it was a risk. I mean, we didn't know how Omar would react to making his debut in singles as well. Usually when people come in to make their debut, they're usually in a doubles format, and they have the advantage of having someone on court to them to help them. But Omar was fantastic. He won in straight sets and very composed, and it just, yeah, as I say, look, it worked out, and we suppose we got lucky.
Yeah, but I suppose Omar's performance probably goes back again to what we were talking about, that team spirit part, and he feeling like a complete part of the team and a vital part of the team, so his confidence was high then when he came in.
Yeah absolutely. Like, we kept Amar sharp the days he wasn't playing. Carlos used to take him down 7 o'clock every morning to do training outside of our training, and I used to come down with the lads then around 9-ish. So we kept him sharp with it was always in the back of our heads that he was going to play, so we just wanted to make sure that he was ready when he did play. And he was fantastic, Amar. I mean, he didn't play the first 2 days, but he was the loudest on the bench. He was really bought into it, so fantastic debut for him, and bright future definitely for him.
What were the nerves like going into the Georgia match then? What were your kind of words of advice as captain to the lads going into that match?
Yeah, I mean, advice was that, look, this is what we played all week for. This was it. Everything was set up. Was I nervous? Yeah, I was very nervous, but I didn't let the lads know that. I felt we were in a good place because of the way they were playing. The doubles team, Dave O'Hare and Simon Carr, were playing some really good doubles all week, and Simon was obviously playing very well singles as well. He had beaten Katarina, as I said, and he had lost to him previously, so he was in a good place. And Oscar was getting better as the week went on, so I felt we were in a good place going into it. Obviously, those guys, that Georgian team, were 24 places ahead of us in the world ranking. They were actually the number one ranked team there. So, again, on paper, we were up against it, but I just had a good feeling about it. Oscar went in and played Bakshi, the first guy, and lost. It was a very nervy match. He probably didn't play his best tennis, and the other guy didn't beat her. And we were 1-0 down, so then we were under pressure. But Simon went in and played Metrovelli. Alexander Metrovelli, who's another top player, and really put on a fantastic performance, won 6-2, 6-2. And then after that, we had shared the singles rubbers, I felt that we could, felt we were in a good place going to the doubles. I was very confident going into the doubles. And we won that fairly convincingly, 6-3, 6-1. Now, at the time, even though we were well up in the match, it didn't seem convincing at the side of the court. But looking back on it, we were fairly convincing, and we were fairly comfortable in that doubles. And that Georgia team were actually at the ATB Cup at the start of the year down in Australia. So they've played at a very high level. So it was brilliant to beat a team like that. And it was the lads fully deserved it, you know. So I was delighted for them.
What's that feeling like when the winning point is won and the celebrations start?
Yeah, it was a bit surreal, really, as such. Like, obviously we had this in our heads, but it's another thing going out and actually doing it. And there was a bit of emotion from everyone, if I'm being brutally honest. And it was brilliant. It was just rewards, really, because they put a lot of time into it. And like, you have to remember, tennis is a lonely sport. These guys are traveling on their own every week, so to do it as a team is extra special for them. And no, I was just delighted for them. I was delighted for Carlos, my co-captain. I was delighted for Lisa Murphy, who did fierce work for us as well. She was she's an administrator from Tennis Ireland, and our physio, Antonis Zacharopoulos, who the lads christened as Anto after the first day. Actually, a converted Irishman at this stage. He really was part of the team as well. He was fantastic. So I was just delighted for all the lads, and I was delighted for Tennis in Ireland. We're hoping that this is a starting point and we can push on from here.
Yeah, and it's Group 2 now. It's a step up for the next Davis Cup, which is a fantastic achievement, I guess, and I suppose. But I suppose the work starts now, I guess, for that.
Yeah, so the next tie will be March of next year. It is a big step up. I mean, like, I was looking at the teams that were in Group 2 this year. You had Switzerland. They've produced a decent player or two over the last few years. You had the likes of Greece with Tsitsipas, Bulgaria, Poland. So it's a massive step up. But we feel that... this is where we belong, you know, and we feel that we want to compete and we want to stay in Group 2. So the lads are really looking forward to next year. It's been a big goal of theirs for a while now, and they're looking forward to getting stuck in and such. And I think the big thing about Group 2 is that the weekend tie is back, so you just get drawn against one nation. So you have the possibility of bringing some big tennis stars over to Ireland, which would be fantastic, and would be fantastic for the promotion as a sport, you know.
That's what I was going to ask you about, was, I suppose, the knock-on effect of this for tennis in Ireland as a whole. Hopefully it'll have a great effect and it'll encourage more people to pick up a racket.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, we've said for a while now, we just need some of these guys to break through, and events like this and with the support of yourselves has been fantastic, you know. I mean, tennis is, it actually is a very popular sport in Ireland. But at performance level, we need to push on, and we know that it's actually a pretty social sport in Ireland. But we need to push on. But with results like this, and what happens on the back of this, we're going into World Group 2, the possibility of bringing over some top players, and hopefully winning matches in World Group 2. We think that'll only do good things for the future, you know.
And what's next now, Keane? Obviously, you are standing captain in Cyprus. I obviously imagine you'd like to be involved with this team going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would like to be, but the captain is Conor Nyland, so Conor will be coming back in for the next tie. I'm just delighted that myself and Carlos are just delighted to hand it back to him in a decent state. So Conor is the captain. As I said to you before, Conor is a legend of Irish tennis. He's probably our best player ever. So delighted to hand it back to him, and I'm sure he's going to take it on to the next level with the lads, you know.
Excellent stuff. Keane, pleasure talking to you. Congratulations again on an incredible week, and no doubt we'll be talking to you again soon.
Thanks a million, Rory. Appreciate it.
That's Keane Blake there. He was the co-captain for Ireland at the Davis Cup. An incredible week for them in Cyprus, securing promotion to Group 2. So congratulations to Keane and indeed everyone involved in the Irish team. Looks like it's all over in Budapest. It is Czech Republic 2, Netherlands 0. Patrick Schick with the second goal for the Czech Republic against the 10-man Netherlands, and there's about 4 minutes left to go in that game. Last night, Cove Ramblers had a great win at a 3-2 win over Wexford. They were a goal down at half time, but second half goals from Charlie Lyons, Killian Cooper and Kieran Griffin got them all 3 points. Wexford a late consolation there as well. Watched the second half of that game last night. Thought Ramblers were absolutely excellent, and this is the reaction of boss Stuart Ashton.
Yeah, obviously delighted with the result. At the end of the day, I think it was a fair result. First half was poor on our behalf. We didn't play as we can do. We were sloppy, and we conceded. I don't know whether deservedly so, you know, to let someone in about an offside, but we had to get on with it. We had chances to clear it after that, and they've stuck it away. Fair play to them. And then we've regrouped at half time. And a different team came out second half, and we played better, and we created chances, and we could have had a few more as well easily.
Any particular reason why you think you maybe were so poor in the first half?
No, just fellas weren't tuned in properly. They know themselves that they were better than that, and we told them to respond to that in the second half. Each individual, it was just casual, sloppy. Don't know why they turned up like that, but then obviously half time we had a chat and expected better, and they've responded brilliantly, and we've seen the display for the second half.
Yeah, but there's some strong words so at half time, and were you happy with how they reacted in the second half?
Probably a few strong words, yeah. Deservedly so, and as I've just said to them there, they deserved the second half, because they were a different team, different players, different performances. And when we play like that, as we've seen, we can match anyone. You know, we closed them down when we had to. we played a bit of football when we could, and when we had to, we put it in the areas that were dangerous to them, and we got our rewards for it.
How big a result is it for Cove? Obviously, you go above Cross City now and everything, but just how important was it to get the win in general?
Yeah, obviously, any win's a win, like, you know, but obviously, you know, after losing last week, it's a disappointment. You know, so after a little run before that, so hopefully now we can start another little run from here. But again, we've got to look at our performances, which we'll do in the week, and we'll analyse those and we'll go from there.
Alright, just finally on the injury front, Keane Murphy went off in the second half. How is he?
Yeah, it's just a quad, so hopefully not too bad. Obviously, he'll miss the few days training next week, and then we'll see where he is there. Like,
yeah, because he looked disappointed with it. Obviously, he was hitting the turf and stuff, but is it one of them that maybe at this moment doesn't look too bad? Or?
No, it's not as bad. I think they're disappointed with him. I think it's more of a reoccurrence. He had that. I think it was the City game he came off, and he missed a game after that then, so the disappointment is there, that it's a reoccurrence of that, but it's not as bad as first thought, so hopefully he'll be back sooner rather than later.
That's Ramblers boss Stuart Ashton there speaking after their impressive win last night, 3-2 over Wexford was how it finished down at St Comans Park. Now, if you're listening to last night's show and if you missed it, you can get the podcast on redfm.ie or from wherever you download your podcasts from. We played the first part of our interview with Jesse Barr, the Olympian current Team Ireland psychologist, who is in conversation with Valerie during the week. And this is the second part of Valerie's conversation with the Team Ireland psychologist, Jesse Barr.
The same way. Is that a lot for you to take on, having all those athletes to be worrying about? I mean, who do you talk to? Like, who is your psychologist when it comes to this? Because I feel like you probably can't switch off from it.
Yeah, and you know what? It's something I did maybe this year in the pandemic, probably struggle a bit more so than I realized. It was funny, I have my performance review with my boss tomorrow, and something I probably will say to her is that I probably didn't utilize speaking to her as much. And I think all of the performance psychologists, wherever we were based around the country, I think we all collectively felt the same thing, that we were like, we're kind of the end of the line. You know, we're taking a lot of the stress and the uncertainty. Where are we going with that? Who are we? Who's our offload? And you know, my fiance Paul is a trainee surgeon, so I didn't want to always be offloading on him because he's just as stressed out. So, you know, we actually we decided to have like a weekly psychology team meeting. So it's the performance psychologist, clinical psychologist, and life skills team meet once a week. And I think we didn't realize how much we needed it until we had it. And it was an opt-in, opt-out. And I've been on it every single Monday for the last however many weeks, because it's just that safe space that we can kind of say, God, I found that really hard, or sharing ideas and just kind of say, you know, kind of that group where you can just kind of just deload and say, God, I just found this week was tough. I've had this going on and I've had to help athletes with this. And you know, you might just kind of go, yeah, that is really tough. And sometimes you just needed that from someone else. So look, it is something that maybe I didn't utilize as much, that kind of support within the institute for people who, because it was quite a unique, like my granny is funny. She lives down here in Waterford as well. Just can't get her head around this working from home thing or working at the day. So she wouldn't have been the person to go to, for example. So it was knowing who was the right person who understood the challenges. So that group has been really valuable. And it's probably something I didn't reach out and just kind of say, God, look, I'm finding that I've taken on a lot more athletes and I'm finding a bit overwhelmed to keep on top of all the different people I have. Between the texts that I come in and emails, I sometimes find I'm not the most organized person. So people can slip through the cracks and then I carry that guilt with that. And, you know, that can potentially affect my performance. So it's just making sure you're talking to someone and getting strategies from them as well as bring out all the strategies.
Good. Well, I'm delighted. And it's important that you get that release as well, to be honest, because you're looking after so many of them. But you did mention you're going to Tokyo.
I will be. I'll be traveling as part of the team, which is really exciting. So unfortunately, I won't get to see Tokyo in the way I would have hoped. But you know what? It's an Olympics and it's going to be an experience and I'm embracing it for what it is. You know, I could say and lament the way it should be and, oh, but what about the opening and closing ceremony? We won't be able to do this. And I say, it is what it is. It's going to be a challenge, but it's one I'm going to embrace because I'm probably going to learn an awful lot in a very short amount of time. So my role out there will be initially in the holding camp with the athletes. So it's going to be in a hotel where athletes will travel into and stay until they move on to their respective villages. So it'll be a lot of people arriving in very tired and maybe a bit cranky and jet lagged and getting used to the heat. And then they'll travel into the village 3 or 4 days out from competition. And then the main sport that I'll be working with in Tokyo will be track cycling. So after about 2 weeks, I'll travel to their venue. It's not within the main camp. It's a little bit further away. So they are going to be competing and I'll be there to support them on site. So it's really exciting. Like it's an amazing opportunity, regardless of all of the difference and the changes and the challenges.
When it comes to family members and brothers and sisters, I know that I don't have any brothers and sisters, so I can't really talk on behalf, but I know a lot of brothers and sisters don't get on. They don't listen to each other. Does your brother ever come to you for some psychology or is he like, go away, I couldn't be listening to?
No, he does not. No, I'm his big sister. And look, I know there's been times he's kind of asked me stuff and I know when he's listening and I know when he's rolling his eyes and I would never give advice where he doesn't want it. I would never come home and be like, oh, you didn't perform well now today. Tell me about it. You know, I would never go into psychologist mode with him because he'd straight away see right through me. So no, we're too close to do that, but we're actually going to be in the holding camp together, which would be really exciting. So I think it would be nice for both of us to have someone really familiar, you know, there. Not that we're going to be hanging out all the time because he'll be too cool for that, but no. We just even to know that he's there and I'm there if he needs it. Like my mum is a worrier. It's a second games. He's a grown man, but she'll still be going, just keep an eye on him now. It'd be, you know, I worry, you know, so that would be really, really nice. And we do get on, but yeah, there's limits and the professional limit is drawn at, you're not my sports psychologist, Jess. No.
Brilliant. Well, yeah, I'm delighted that you both get to go and experience it together. And I know before I let you go, I just want to mention how the Team Ireland athletes have been farming over the last few weeks in the Europeans. And, you know, they're cracking PBs and they're just, and there's a lot of media exposure and it's absolutely great for the games before they head off.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And like, you know, I've been talking about this earlier. There's a lot of athletes in what you might consider, they're not obscure sports, but they are the more less heard of outside of an Olympic cycle. So, you know, you likes of diving, taekwondo, gymnastics, you know, those sports that you only seem to hear about around Olympics. And these people are developing a bit of a profile, which is really exciting. It can be a challenge as well, because these people are not someone who has a profile every other, you know, year coming into it. So that would be something I, you know, would work with athletes if I'm noticing that there's a big, you know, media attention on them that they may not be used to. How are they coping with it? What do they need to do? You know, is it a case that if they go to the games, they just turn off social media or they delete the apps so they're not reading all the crap about them, negative or positive? It can be very easy to get swept up in that, no matter what it says, you know, kind of just be reading loads of stuff about yourself. But you know what? I think it's going to give the country such a lift, you know, and even just seeing how excited people are. And there's been so much exposure of athletes as they qualify and a big deal being made of, like I said, those smaller sports. So I think there's, you can feel the excitement is building for the games. You know, it's something that kind of brings everybody together, the Olympics anyway, and the Paralympics. But this year in particular, I think it's, I feel like it's the lift we all need. It's that positive thing that we all sit down and we all watch and we all talk about. Like you remember the first few bits of sport that started being publicized this year and how exciting it was to just see something small and just something on TV. So, yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be middle of the night, obviously, for most people. But I think it's just going to be something that everyone's going to really rally behind our team this time.
Yeah, it's been great over the last few weeks. I've had plenty of FBD ambassadors on the show telling us all about their sport that you wouldn't exactly be hearing much about. And it's great to be able to give them the time to share that. But FBD have been amazing. They have launched the Sound Support campaign. I did see an absolutely amazing video before we came on and chatted of Kelly and Chloe and Nat. And it's just, this campaign is class. It's basically recording some of the sounds from their training and to give them a bit of a lift. And even their family members had some notes for them on it.
Oh, I know, like I watched it now. I've seen it a few times at this stage, but I still, when you see, you know, Kelly listening to it in the ring and you just see her tearing up, and obviously like she's a boxer, you know, you see her like a bit of a punching bag, and then suddenly she's sitting there and it just shows what it means, you know, like they say, it shows what it means to have that support. And, you know, I really like that FBD have been able to create that idea that even though support is, you know, 10,000 kilometres away, the support is still there. And for those athletes to have those little messages built into their own personalised song is just amazing. But I think that even if it for athletes who don't have their own personalised song to listen to, just to kind of know that like that support is going to be with them, and there's going to be different things coming up from FBD that they're going to do that to encourage people to get behind the team and to show their support. You know, I think it's a really nice message because it is going to be a different games in terms of how we support it and how it is supported and how the athletes feel that support. But it doesn't mean it's not there because they can't see it.
Yeah, I will share that video on the Big Red Bench Twitter for anyone that does want to have a look at it. So head over there after the show. But I'm the very best of luck to you in Tokyo. I'm very jealous that you get to go.
I don't know. When you hear about some of the restrictions, you might be going, I'm not going to see any of Tokyo, unfortunately. So don't be too jealous. But look, amazing opportunity to get to go with the team.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for joining us on the bench this week.
Thank you so much, Valerie. Lovely to meet you.
That's Jesse Barr, the Team Ireland psychologist, chatting to Valerie. Part two of that conversation, part one, available on the Big Red Bench podcast from last night's show. If you want to check that out, it's finished in the European Championship game this evening. Czech Republic have beaten Netherlands by 2-0, so they are into the last 16. Belgium and Portugal is an 8 o'clock start tonight. In the Red FM Hurling League, St. Finbarrs have beaten Bishopstown 119-15. And best luck as well to the Cork Camogie team, who are taking on Tipperary this evening in the Munster Senior Championship semi-final. 7:15 the start time for that one. It's going to be live streamed as well, so you can tune in to that. I've put the link up on our Twitter page at Big Red Bench. But that is it from us. Thank you very much indeed for tuning our way this evening. We're back next Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. 3 hours of the best Irish music on the way with Connor next with Green on Red. We're back next Saturday, as I said. Podcast will be online very, very shortly. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday, folks. I'll talk to you then.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.